This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back into the show. The Chiefs have wrapped up minicamp, which means that we have been jettisoned into what we call around here the dark times. And what better way to go into the dark times than to be illuminated by the lightsaber wielded by Matt Derrick of ChiefsDigest.com, who joins us now. I know that you didn't actually get to make a lightsaber and that we've been over this, but still, I feel like we're going to go ahead and make you, like, Jedi Matt? Jedi Derrick? Jedi Matt? None of those work. None of these are good. We need to get you a good Jedi name.
Yeah, I do have a lightsaber. I went ahead and bought one as a legacy, what they call lightsabers.
Oh, you're
so
right.
I forgot about that. Skywalker's green lightsaber from Return of the Jedi.
No, you're right. Okay, I forgot about that. I've been so caught up in the droid the whole time. You do have Luke's lightsaber. Okay, very good. So we will let you illuminate the dark ages that we enter here, because, like, what are you going to do for the next 5 or 6 weeks?
Wander around aimlessly looking for football. If there's a pickup game somewhere,
yeah.
What can you do? Basically, this time, as we all parted ways, it was all like, hey, you know, really hope I don't see you for 6 weeks. Because if we do run into each other, we get back together, it's probably because somebody's done something stupid.
Right.
So, you know, that's kind of what you're doing this time of year is, yeah, you kind of want something to do, but no, I don't really want anything to do.
Yeah. That's fair. That's reason. Andy Reid said he's going to the beach. Are you going? You going anywhere? Do you have any great plans?
I have absolutely zero plans.
That's also very freeing.
I am working on some projects. Hopefully, have some stuff coming up for training camp that people will like if everything comes together. So yeah, I mean, hopefully there'll be some stuff, and obviously we'll have things coming up on off season things that you work on the website and Chiefs Digest. So we'll keep busy and we'll find something to do.
Was there anything throughout minicamps that stuck out to you? We'll talk about Mitch Schwartz and Harrison Butker both in a second, but like, because I feel like this might be the easier question to just hop right into and out of again. I've made fun of all of this as practice many times over. The minicamps are a little more interesting than OTAs, but maybe not by too much. Did anything jump out to you?
You know, if anything, I think it's just to reinforce a couple of things that you were wondering about, if there was any questions. One is I think the offense is still going to look pretty good, even with some of the pieces that they're missing from the last couple of years. It's still going to be fine. It's Patrick Mahomes. It's Andy Reid. They're going to be fine. And two, the defense, I mean, they look like they got the fire. We'll see if it lasts. We'll see if it translates into a better performance. But that defense, they look like they're having fun. They look like they're flying around. It looks like they've got some guys with athleticism that can do some things. And they seem to be enjoying themselves in that. You know, sometimes that's a big part of playing well together is that you got a team that fits together and they like their coaching staff and everything comes together. Right now, I think it's all puppies and unicorns for that defense.
I love that so much. There were a couple of things. I would give the nod to Anthony Hitchens and Charvarius Ward for helping this be interesting a couple of the days in there, where Hitchens talked about how simple this defense has been for him and how it's, you know, one gap here, one gap there, everybody's got a gap, and that he could watch film. He said this verbatim without having a coach, like, hovering over. He didn't use the word hover, but without coaches behind him, which made me think that in Bob Sutton's defense, they had so much going on there that they literally needed Bob Sutton to be there to, like, explain what they were doing wrong, which is pretty wild to me. Charvarius Ward said that it's been much better this year as opposed to last year. He parsed even fewer words, said that this staff is full of better communicators and better teachers than last year's, which, again, he said, like, referring specifically to last season. What did you make of those guys and what they had to say in that entire sort of peek into what we had last year?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, they're maybe not so subtle digs at what went on in the past, for sure. But I think it's illuminating for a lot of reasons. I mean, one is that, obviously, I think that even though a lot of people towed the company line last year, it's evident that things were not all puppies and unicorns last year for that defense. I mean, there was some differences, and and frustrations. And, you know, it didn't really bubble over, but now you're kind of seeing guys come out and say, yeah, you know what, there were some things wrong last year, things that we didn't like. And, you know, maybe it's a little bit of just, you know, you're if things weren't going well and you've got a fresh start, things are always going to look better. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, it does seem like that Steve Spagnuolo is focusing on some of the things that the defensive players, you know, had some frustrations with last year. Maybe it is communication was a big part of it, and that they just like the style of Spagnuolo better and the way that he handles it. And clearly, you can see that on the field. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, with the one-on-one instruction that Steve Spagnuolo gives guys, he's, you know, taking players off to the side, with the hands-on work that the assistant coaches are doing too. You can see, I mean, it's absolutely a more active coaching group out there than they had a year ago.
And it's strikingly so. Where, like you said, like
taking players off to the side, with the hands-on work that the assistant coaches are doing too, you can see. I mean, it's absolutely a more active coaching group out there than they had a year ago.
And it's strikingly so. Where, like you said, like we've been out there, and I think it was during OTAs at one point. I saw a coach working with Tre'Varius Ward off on the side, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting. He's holding his helmet like they're doing some like technique kind of stuff. And I'm like, who is that again? Because it's a new coaching staff, and I don't know everybody's face and name all together all at once. Yeah, I looked a little closer from a ways away. I went, oh, that's Steve Spagnuolo. he's actually over there working with Ward on whatever it is that he thinks is noteworthy at this point. Like this feels both. And I don't know, maybe this is me seeing the shiny new thing, so you can correct me if I'm getting ahead of my skis here. But it feels like this is both the defense that's better for the young guys and the defense that's better for the vets. Like, it's better to pick it up and learn, but it's also better to have it established this way. Like, it truly seems like this defense is constructed in a way that is going to end up being so much better at every possible turn, as opposed to the disaster that were these last couple of years with Bob Sutton.
I mean, if you want to take it from the straw man point of view and try and defend Bob Sutton a little bit, which I'm not trying to do, but just saying that, you know, when you've been in a defense 5 or 6 years, it's only natural for things to get more complicated and I think more difficult sometimes.
Right.
And part of that is that, you know, that what this defense needs to do, because it was so bad last year, is to really simplify things. Mm-hmm. It's making sure that you're doing just A, B, and C correctly, and you're not being too exotic. Now, if we're still talking about this defense being simple 2 or 3 years from now, offenses will probably have figured it out,
yeah.
And that will be a problem. So it will need to get more complicated and difficult. But for right now, for what they need to do, and when you've got an offense like this, like we've been saying, you don't have to have the number 3 defense in the league.
Right.
You get the number 18 defense in the league, and you're probably a Super Bowl team.
So we can spend as little time on this as possible, but I do think it'd be a little disingenuous to not mention Tyreek Hill. Like, Andy Reid mentioned Tyreek Hill, because he's saying, I'm not going to talk about him, but he said last time I opened my mouth, I put my foot right into it, which I thought was, you know, a nice sense of humor to have around a not terribly humorous topic, but, you know, because he said the case had been reopened, then it turned out that it hadn't, all of that. We can or cannot dive into all of the reporting and all of that and all of the editorializing, or you can just tell me how many games you think Tyreek Hill ends up missing before he's back on the field for the Chiefs.
Well, it was a whole mess, and I think Andy Reid took more responsibility than, frankly, he needed to, because he was working off the same information that a lot of us were working with.
Yep.
And that wasn't simply, I can't even call it bad reporting, because mm-hmm. that's what people were told.
Yeah.
You know, and I had first and second hand information that was the same way, so I'm no different. And we didn't have a district attorney coming out and saying, nope, that's wrong.
Right.
Don't read about it. Fake news.
Right.
Nothing
yeah.
like that. And you didn't even have, even Tyreek Hill's attorney didn't come out and say that.
That's
so
true.
Had someone come out and forcefully said from the beginning, no, that's not the case, there would have been a completely different couple of weeks for Tyreek Hill. I still am under the impression and just the belief that the league, the Chiefs, Tyreek Hill want this over with as quickly as possible
mm-hmm.
and not to drag into the season. I think he's going to be suspended. I don't know how long. It could vary, but I think mm-hmm. he's going to play this year, and I think mm-hmm. he's going to play for the Chiefs.
Yeah, so real quick on this, because this has just sort of been the stance I've been at. I'm curious if you think this is reasonable. Jimmy Smith for the Ravens last year got four games for, like, it was a pattern of verbally abusive behavior towards a girlfriend, an ex-girlfriend, I think is what essentially the details of that were. So he gets four games for that. They didn't appeal. I don't think, unless the NFL tries to give Tyreek Hill 16 games, I can't imagine an appeal, because that just makes it drag on even longer. I would imagine that Hill would probably be pretty down to just accept whatever the punishment would be, considering that all of this has, I mean, every day that this is a thing that is in the public zeitgeist is bad for everyone. But the child abuse thing, which Adrian Peterson took a long suspension for, that would obviously change things. But if we don't get any new information, is it fair to use the Jimmy Smith suspension from last year as a four-game barometer and to assume something around that length for Hill?
I mean, I think you've hit on the two examples. Well, and actually, and with the Adrian Peterson, probably even maybe a closer correlation. But those are probably two good examples of the high end and low end.
Yeah.
Now take the indefinite suspension that Adrian Peterson got with the league, and they went back and forth in the courts. Eventually, it turned into an 8-game suspension, and that's probably the high end. And I think you'd have to be somewhat concerned that it could be 8 games, because the comparisons are very similar as far as the accusations go and what we know publicly at this point. But you kind of also said the other thing, too, which is that I think there'll be a negotiated settlement. Which is, okay, we could suspend you for this long. We're going to suspend you for this instead, as long as you don't fight it and drag this out any further. And that's, I think, what everybody wants to have happen.
Yeah. So the Adrian Peterson thing, the one element that is different, I think, is that we don't have a ruling that Tyreek Hill was specifically the person that ended up bruising his child by way of overzealous discipline, which I say it that way to be very generous, but because there is the tension of what was him and what was the fiance and what's the household altogether and all of that. So believe it or not, yeah, this is cloudy still, and we don't have all the information. What an absolute stunner. But I think that's a good piece of information to keep in mind, that 4-8 feels reasonable. What about the contract extensions that we saw before we get to the one that we haven't seen yet? Harrison Butker gets a pretty hefty deal. Mitch Schwartz gets another year. Do both of those make as much sense on the surface as they could have possibly made?
Yeah, I mean, I you could always quibble, and I know some people will, if overpaying sometimes specialists. I mean, because you basically have made Harrison Butker one of the highest paid kickers in the league. Mm-hmm. But then again, last couple of years, he's been one of the best kickers in the league. So that's not a bad investment. And the grand scheme of things, it's as far as salary cap goes, it's affordable. So it's not that big of a deal. Yep. Now, Mitchell Schwartz, you could have given anything to. The guy's a bargain, even with the 11.2 that they're adding on at the back end of this deal. That's still a tremendous bargain when you look at what other right tackles are getting paid in this league. So to me, yeah, I mean, that's money well spent. The Chiefs got the money. They're able to spread the money around a little bit. So, you know, it's they can manage it cap wise. They obviously have the money this year too. So, but yeah, it seems like they're right now interested in giving money to anybody on the team that wants it, other than if your name is Chris Jones.
Yeah. And so, like, obviously we could have started there. We've talked about it so much, but it's still a story. What is your best reading into all of it so far? Is it a little bit of currently pretty low grade tension, just trying to figure out a few details still that will probably take over the next few weeks and up until training camp? Is there a real chance the Chiefs are really just not willing to pay Chris Jones? Is there a real chance that Chris Jones is asking for more money than is reasonable? What's the best guess?
It's a mess. I mean, that's really what it is. I mean, it's a mess. And I know that everybody wants this, something, you know, finalized and done with, and just at least addressed for the season before the beginning of training camp. Because a holdout's not going to work for Chris Jones, not going to work for the Chiefs. And drama is what this team needs to avoid. I mean, I still say You go back to what the Steelers went through with Le'Veon Bell last year, and you tell me that that did not affect that team on and off the field.
Yeah.
That's a good team. I mean, it is. They've got good players, and that Le'Veon Bell, and you can throw in some of their other drama too. It ripped that team apart. You can't have that happen when you've got a team that you think is a Super Bowl team. You can't let it get ripped apart with things like this, and that's kind of where they're headed. But you look at all of the events that are taking place. You sign Frank Clark, you make it really, really difficult to pay Chris Jones what he's asking for.
Yeah,
that's just the bottom line. And you know, and what's Chris Jones wanting? I mean, is he wanting to be paid like a defensive tackle that put 15 sacks? Well, if he wants that, that's a lot of money, and the Chiefs just don't have that flexibility to do that right now. So it looks like, you know, that these are just two forces going in opposite directions. It's still in the best interest of everybody that Chris Jones shows up at the beginning of the training camp, and whether he's got a new deal or not. I mean, he's pretty much has to. I mean, there's nothing in his best interest that sees him sitting out or missing any time this year.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, Chiefs have all the leverage. So the only leverage that Chris Jones has is just making everybody miserable talking about it. But financially, he's got no leverage at this point.
But so that's something we talk about a lot. The word leverage, I think, is fascinating because you're right. He doesn't have any of the financial leverage or the contractual leverage because it's not just having another year on the deal still. It's the franchise tag that is hovering over for next year. But he can create all of that stuff that the Chiefs don't want. He can create daily questions for Andy Reid during training camp and questions for Brett Veach and the questions that will lead every segment about the Chiefs up into August. You know, it can all be about where is Chris Jones? What are they going to pay Chris Jones and everything? Like the story from Cleveland with Duke Johnson and Baker Mayfield and all of that. Like I found all that really interesting because the only leverage that Duke Johnson had was to make a mess out of things publicly and see if they'll move on from him. So I don't know. I find it interesting because I think it's only fair for guys to take whatever leverage they have and try to make a better situation for themselves. But it's also extremely messy.
It is, and to the credit, and frankly, the Chris Jones' credit and the Chiefs' credit, too, they haven't made it messy yet.
Mm-hmm.
Everything has just been kind of a low flame. I mean, maybe you could have seen Andy Reid's comments at the beginning of the offseason workout saying that he hadn't talked to Chris Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that was, you know, maybe you could interpret that one way because he's addressed it differently than he has addressed other players, other veterans not being around during the offseason program. I did think that was of note.
Yeah.
But, you know, these two sides haven't gotten nasty yet.
Yeah.
And as long as they don't go negative on either side, I mean, you can get through this. Yeah. But that's the only thing to watch out for is just if this becomes a messy, negative situation, I don't see a scenario where Chris Jones gets traded because I think that this team is just counting on him too much.
Mm-hmm.
But is it in the realm of possibility? I mean, almost any outcome is possible at this point if you just want the best resolution for all parties.
Well, and so that was exactly the next thing that I wanted to ask about because the Chiefs, whenever the Chiefs decided they didn't want Justin Houston or Dee Ford on this team this year, they decided it pretty swiftly and they moved on it pretty quickly. And that all felt like there wasn't probably a lot of tension there. And with Eric Berry, too, frankly, with those three guys, it seemed like the Chiefs had made a decision without too much struggle. And then they acted on it very quickly. If they didn't want to pay Chris Jones at any point, I think they probably would have moved him by now, right? Like pre-draft.
You could have. I mean, if you just saw this as simply an unresolvable situation, then, yeah, you could have moved Chris Jones earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. I mean, they have generally been, you know, moved with alacrity when they've had, you know, the decision to make. They haven't usually let these things drag on very long.
Mm-hmm.
But it's – I don't know. It's I don't know that there's any number that the Chiefs could come up with financially that makes Chris Jones happy. I mean,
yeah.
You know, what is that number? Because, like I said, you're paying Frank Clark. You're going to have to pay Patrick Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
If you're thinking you might keep Tyreek Hill with this team long term,
mm-hmm.
you might need that franchise player designation next year for him. which precludes it from being used on Chris Jones. And you know, and that would be, you know, the most likely scenario that one would think might happen is that it's what D-Ford did, which is, you know, D-Ford comes in and, you know, plays. He never held out. He was there the entire time. But if Chris Jones comes in, plays it out, Chiefs tag Chris Jones, and then trade him, because it certainly seems with everything that's happened in this offseason and with the Frank Clark deal being the biggest factor, it's hard to see carving out $18 million a year for Chris Jones.
It's really interesting. I know this is an impossible question, but like, why, if you had to try to get into the head of Brett Veach, Andy Reid, Steve Spagnuolo, maybe, what is it about Chris Jones that wouldn't be worth carving out that money? Because you mentioned that, you know, once you're stacking all these contracts up, eventually that gets difficult. But they do have space this year, and the way that money falls off of contracts over years, like I don't know. I feel like if they decided to make Chris Jones a priority at the very least, they could pull that off. What would be the best logic for them not thinking he's worth $18 or $20 million a year?
I think that the argument that I think that probably someone would make is that obviously Chris Jones played out of his mind last year, and that there's no evidence necessarily to suggest that 2018 is how he's going to play for the next 3 or 4 years. You know, there's a reasonable chance that was the aberration. Now, if you're looking for just how you critique Chris Jones and look for the negatives, I mean, you can say, hey, yeah, he put up a lot of sacks, but at that position, you know, it's almost sometimes as much of a plan to run and doing those things, taking on blocks as anything else. And this Chiefs defense is built a little bit differently. Now, all that said, I mean, Chris Jones is a really talented player, so it's hard to see that he wouldn't work in a Steve Spagnuolo system. But at the same time, I mean, it begs the question about, you know, why the Chiefs decided in this offseason and clearly it was a decision that included Steve Spagnuolo, Brett Veach, and everyone else who has a voice. We think that it's better to invest this money in Frank Clark and Chris Jones.
It's really interesting, and I don't know. I mean, the way we talked during the offseason before Frank Clark and before all of this, I was starting to really buy in a lot to the idea of the best way to build a defense in 2019 and 2020 and all is to build the secondary first. And the Chiefs haven't done that. And then I would probably argue somewhere after that, the best thing to do is to build an interior pass rush before an outside one. And then the Chiefs are moving in that direction also. I know Steve Spagnuolo has always had a rotation of pass rushers, and those have largely been edge guys, but they also invest in the draft in Derek Nnadi last year and Colin Saunders this year, and they paid Xavier Williams last year. Is there a clear philosophy coming together in your mind?
I'm not sure that I can say there's a clear philosophy because I still think that a lot of what the Chiefs have been doing defensively has been triage. It's just kind of the way that maybe John, you want to blame it on John Dorsey. He's the one that would put him in the kind of roster mess. But the last couple of years, I mean, since Brett Veach took over the job, it largely has been triage. You know, you paid a lot of money for Anthony Hitchens. Because you kind of had to. I mean, that was a pretty big piece. I mean, that was somebody that they needed. And I buy into the conspiracy theory, obviously, that Brett Veach, on some level, thought he was going to be playing a 4-3 this year.
Because
he certainly seems to have been building this team for the last couple of years like they were going to eventually play a 4-3. But it still feels like a lot of the things that they've done on the defensive side, most of it has been about the short-term needs and not maybe the five-year plan, but they seem to be getting there. I mean, Frank Clark is obviously kind of part of a five-year plan.
Right.
You know, Kendall Fuller, you could probably fit in, you know, the category of five-year plan kind of player. And I think that if he plays well, and they might even try, if they think they can get a deal done with Kendall Fuller now, that would probably be the time to do it. And then if he goes out and has a really good season and becomes very pricey next offseason as a free agent. But, yeah, I mean, you know, the secondary outside of, you know, Tyrann Mathieu, who I think you hope is part of a five-year plan, but contract-wise is kind of a short-term solution. You know, it's I don't know that you've got, you know, maybe more than a couple of guys that you think on defense that are going to be here in 2021. especially compared to the offensive side, where you're like, gosh, yeah, I mean, all these guys might be here in 2021.
I haven't thought about Kendall Fuller's contract in a long time. Like, that was, you know, for a while, it was looking at him, Hill, and Chris Jones. Obviously, we've talked a ton about Tyreek Hill for non-contract-related reasons. We've talked a ton about Chris Jones for contract-specific reasons. As they give the money to Harrison Butker, they give the deal to extend Mitch Schwartz. Like, they're trying to cut down on the uncertainty. It would make a lot of sense to just pull the trigger on Kendall Fuller. Like, I don't know if I'm... I think he's a very good football player, and I wish he wasn't the Chiefs' best cornerback. Like, I would like to see them have a more maybe traditional number one corner on this roster, but it seems like they've always valued him really highly. I guess I would think there's a very an above average chance at the very least that they make that move this offseason.
I mean, I think it's something that they should be looking at, and he's always been the third guy that, you know, Brad Veach has talked about when they talked about extending some of their guys and keeping them around. Yeah. They're part of next year's free agent class. I mean, you know, he's always been that third guy. It's just the others kind of suck up all the oxygen and the thought. Mm-hmm. Now, a big part of the question is what would it take to keep Kendall Fuller, especially to keep him from hitting free agency next year, when you may not be able to hang that franchise tag over him.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
Stephen Nelson got 3 years, $25 million.
Yeah.
If that's the market, you're going to pay more than that for Kendall Fuller.
Yeah.
And, you know, and hey, good corners are getting $12 million plus a year. So, you know, if you think Kendall Fuller's the guy, then yeah, maybe it's worth it right now to plug down 4 years, $48 million and lock him up. Because you might have to pay that in the offseason if you want to keep him, if he has a good season.
No, you're
but
right.
But if Kendall Fuller, I mean, obviously it's what his perspective is. But, you know, he got hurt last year. There's always a chance he could get hurt. Maybe he would sign now if he gets more money up front and it makes it a good financial decision, barring an injury. But it's going to cost you. I mean, like I said, if Steve Nelson's getting 3 for $25, I can't see Kendall Fuller getting less than close to 4 for $40 at least, or if a 3-year deal, you know, 3 for $30, 32.
I think he's probably pushing for that fourth year with pretty reasonable success. You said 4 for $48, and then I made a sound as if I had been punched, but like I think that's probably about right. And it's just a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, and I heard your noise. I was like, yeah, I've managed to down Josh here with the shots of the solar plexus.
Yeah, no, it took the wind out of me, because it's just, I'm looking at like this year, and this year is not, this is an average annual value, but this year, there are two guys on the roster making more than $12 million this year, and it's, or making $12 million this year, and it's Sammy Watkins and Eric Fisher. Like, it's just a lot of money.
It is, but, you know, when you look at it, you know, Fuller, he's still 24. He's going to be 24 all through the season. I mean, he's a young guy. So at least if you pay Kendall Fuller now, you give him a 4-year deal, you're not buying into his 30s. You're still buying him through 28, 29 years old.
Yeah.
So that's not a bad deal.
No, and that's fair. And also, I mean, now 2020, again, the cap numbers, then you've got four guys making at least $12 million, and then in 2021, it's two at least, plus eventually Mahomes. But the way you can structure all that is, you know, monopoly
money.
Yeah,
and one of the benefits, I mean, you get with the Kendall Fuller is obviously you know what he is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, I know there's an old adage in contracts that, you know, it's easier to pay for what you know.
Mm-hmm.
You would think that what the Chiefs know about Kendall Fuller is that he's a guy that they want to keep around. I mean, he's been a good player. He's been a good locker room guy. He's flexible. I mean, he's willing to play inside, outside. He's willing to play wherever they put him. You know, those are all things that you just don't get in a lot of corners.
Last question. Have you settled on at least a favorite currently in the clubhouse on your droid naming competition?
You know, so far, other than the one borderline obscene suggestion I got from a local radio host.
Borderline? No, it's very clearly obscene.
So far, a lot of suggestions have involved some combination of the letters P and M and numbers 1 and 5.
I don't know what that would be in reference to. Hold on.
See if you get this one. I considered OSD4.
OSD4.
I don't know if you'd get that one.
I don't know if I do. What is OSD4?
That would be offsides D4.
Oh, no. Oh. Hold on. Oof. Oh, you got me twice. That's two punches to the gut. Thank you, Matt, for coming in and abusing me. That's a toughie to end on, but we're going to go ahead and do it because we're out of time.
I do what I can.
It's Matt Derrick. You can read his stuff at ChiefsDigest.com if you don't mind his perpetually mean-spirited nature, which really, I think everyone talks to Matt Derrick, and he's like, man, this dude's a freaking jerk. This is a real big old meanie who just wants to punch you in the stomach with OSD4 is the name of his droid. I don't know if I'm going to recover from that one. All right, I hope you're ready. I'm not sure that I am, but I hope that somebody is. It's Sports Saturday here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Josh Briscoe in with you for the time being. If you like me, you can just go get Almost Entirely Sports or get your podcasts. It's 4 to 6 on ESPN Kansas City. It's most weeknights here on 810. It occasionally is me here on a Saturday. You know, it's hard to keep it all on track. So just follow me on Twitter at JB Briscoe and subscribe to Almost Entirely Sports wherever you get your podcasts. But here is a sports weekend exclusive. Chris Bolig running the show today. Brings us some Bolig Bites.
Got some good stuff. We already played that OJ clip for you earlier.
Yeah, that
so
was the best,
that
thing,
was
on
the best thing on today's show. But we still got some good things here. We're going to skimp on a few just because of time restraints, but there's going to be some goodies in here, so I hope you all enjoy. But we start out in the world of Ricky Williams. He was just a guest on a podcast called The Space Between. Definitely is astrology-esque Ricky Williams.
Okay.
Kind of talking about, you know, why he left the game, essentially, or kind of his mission outside of football.
I was fortunate to have mentors and teachers, and one of my biggest teacher from jump, she said, "You're not your body, you know. You're not your body. You know, it's African American male. That's not really who you are."
Yeah.
And I think this is the waking up. This is the beginning of the waking up process. Is to realize that we're more than our karma. We're something that has the ability to choose and to change things. And so I was sitting in my locker one day and just thinking about what am I doing with my life? And I was like, "Dude, I'm known for distracting people for a couple hours on a Sunday." You know, and that didn't feel good to me. And I just had the sense, like, I know my senses are something more meaningful I could be doing with my life.
There's one. Ricky Williams, kind of going in depth on, he's kind of done it before, but.
Yeah, he's always been that dude. Like, that's always been Ricky Williams. That's pretty interesting. The first part, maybe less so than the second. The first part feels kind of like some just kind of weirdness.
His karma. He's talking about his karma. He's not being your body.
But I understand that, you know, being a guy that distracts people for a couple hours on a Sunday is kind of a weird, that makes you feel very small whenever you think about that. So that's interesting.
Next up, we got one Stephen A. Smith from I think a few days ago. I think it was after the Golden State Warriors lost to the Toronto Raptors, and an interesting caller on his show.
You're live with Stephen A. What's up, Robert? Robert, go ahead.
Hey,
yes,
B.
Yo, what's up, man? Go ahead.
I don't know who to blame. Steve Curl, Steph Curry, for shooting that shot, man. Almost a good call, man. We do not shoot that shot.
Robert, I ain't gonna lie to you, bro. You okay? You know, you sound like you've been drinking this early in the morning, bro.
Nah, I don't.
You sound a little bit slurred in your speech.
It's legal.
You don't sound like you straight. I don't understand you.
Weed is legal in D.C.
I got you. Have a nice day. No, you just admitted you want some weed. You called up the show while on some weed. I asked you if you were on something, and you said some weed is legal. I'm assuming that means Stephen A. ain't breaking no laws, but I called your show. Ha! So guess what? Goodbye! Call me when you're a bit lucid and more clear.
Dismount there is A+. Plus.
You call in.
We all know Stephen A. Smith, Chris. We know. Nobody doesn't know that Stephen A. right there. That is a Stephen
A.
Smith
classic.
Dismount. I love
that. That is just a dismount on I believe his show's like, what, 2 to 4 on ESPN Radio?
It's two hours.
But yeah, there's one, Stephen A. Smith, getting after it,
yeah, love it
on a caller just because, you know, he was clearly
legal
not
DC,
there.
Baby.
He was clearly not there.
Legal in D.C.
And we stick with the NBA.
Okay.
Drake going live right after the finals. Let's
see
what he
excellent.
Had to say.
Oh, my goodness. Two songs dropping tomorrow. And I'm designing the rings. What else? What else do you want from me? They said I was a curse. Now they're cursing each other out. You know what time it is, man. Yo, Clay, when you're wakeboarding this summer, when you're wakeboarding in your Quicksilver shorts, you know what time it is. When you see me, you better wave friendly too. I-E-I-E. Are you guys dumb? It's going to be all love. I know. You didn't mean it. You didn't mean it, big dog.
I don't think Klay Thompson will be wakeboarding anytime
no,
soon. That just that clip not. Just made me dislike Drake even more probably than I already did. I'm not a huge Drake guy by any means, and that just made me like, oh, I was rooting for the Raptors, but Drake was really making it hard this whole playoffs to root for the Raptors.
I'm pro Drake. I like Drake. Drake also was a little bit goofy in the like walking through the tunnel or wherever he was in Toronto, talking about how they've got the chips. He doesn't want his chips playing. He wants the chips with the dip. And he said chips with the dip about 5 times, and it was a little bit uncomfortable because I think he thought it was extremely good, and it wasn't that great. That audio right there, though, yeah, I don't think Clay's going to wakeboard this summer probably, but I, you know, it was a good line. They said I'm a curse, and they cursed each other out. I thought we might get that in one of the songs that dropped last night.
I can tell you I've not listened to either of these songs that
fine.
He dropped.
They're fine.
Are you a fan of those songs, Jeff?
They're fine, and they're not NBA Finals related. Like, they're just, he could have definitely just dropped those at any given point. And it's fine. They're two Drake songs.
All right, we keep it with the NBA. Former player Nick Van Exel has found a new love that he
what?
Did not know about. So
okay.
let's check it out.
Yo, what's up? What's up? Got my little iced coffee this morning. Just want to let everybody know, all my Twitter followers, everybody that's in my phone, my friends, my family. Real disappointed in y'all that y'all didn't let me know about iced coffee before, so real disappointed. But since it tastes so good, I forget y'all. Peace.
That's strong. Wait until somebody tells him about cold brew. His life's going to change forever.
The funny thing about the video was he was drinking out of a Sonic cup. Which
wow.
I don't even know Sonic had iced coffee.
Yeah, they do. I've had it.
Is it any good?
No.
It's
fine. It's fine. You know, it's better than... I've oftentimes told you about the truth of Taco Bell's breakfast. I do enjoy it. Coffee,
oh.
not great. Not gonna cut it for most of y'all. No, but Sonic's is fine.
So, one Nick Van Exel. Really
hot coffee,
liking...
cold coffee. One forever. Which one do you pick?
I'm a hot coffee guy.
I like both, but if I could only have one, I'd probably take hot.
Hot, like, how could you not drink? Because you can always put cream in it
to,
you know...
I love a cold coffee.
Nah,
what do you do
nah.
when you drink it hot? We drink it black?
Yeah,
usually
go straight
look
black.
Look at us. Look at how manly we are.
But just depends on the day, you know? How am I feeling? Move to the NFL, Zach Ertz. I know there's some big discussion about, you know, the U.S. women's national team
yeah.
with the whole thing about Thailand. Zach Ertz's wife, I believe, plays
mm-hmm.
on the team.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what he had to say about the whole situation.
I got a lot of thoughts on that. First of all, the first tiebreaker in the World Cup for the group stage is a goal differential. So it would be a crime for them to take the foot off the gas and then finish second in the group because they took the foot off the gas. Second, the best way to build team chemistry, and I think you guys saw that a couple years ago with us, was the way we celebrate with one another. And when you're executing like that, executing at a high level, the whole team gets excited, the whole team gets involved, and it's really the best way to build chemistry because you see people so happy for another person's success. And I think you saw that with the entire team going out there yesterday celebrating each and every person's success because it's been building for so long. These girls have been training 4 years for another World Cup.
So there is Zach Ertz talking about the U.S. Women's National Team putting it on Thailand and that no sympathy should be brought on to the Thailand national team.
No, he's clearly right, and everyone else.
Yeah,
is
what
an idiot.
What is your? Yeah, I want to hear what you.
We talked about this at one point one night. Yeah, I mean, listen, this isn't like your rec league. This isn't This isn't 8-year-olds playing soccer. Like, this is the highest possible level that you can be playing professional soccer. And the U.S. was way better than Thailand, and so they scored as much as possible because the first tiebreaker is goal differential.
Well, and
also it's soccer. It's not like you can't put in your like your third team. Chad Henne can't go in because you got three subs, and then just if you score, you can celebrate. These are all people scoring, players scoring in the World Cup. Like, that's exciting.
Yeah, and come on. I was pretty disappointed when Canada, the people from Canada, from TSN, were like, oh, this is so classless, blah, blah, blah.
I don't really care.
Whatever. And you guys, the Raptors were cheering when Kevin Durant got hurt.
I mean, some of the fans were.
Some of the fans were. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Come on. Like, get off our back.
Yeah.
Get off our back, Canada.
Listen, celebrating being good at a sport is fine. On a professional level, if you're paid to play it, you also are paid to stop the other team from putting up 13 goals on you. That's how that works.
So Wanda Durant was on Good Morning America, I guess, right after the injury. It's pretty interesting.
This is Mama Durant?
Mama Durant MVP on with Durant? Robin okay. Roberts on Good Morning America talking about her son after the injury.
Of course, I was excited because he was doing so well. And then when it happened, I just kind of sunk. And I was just glued on him and glued on his eyes to see how he was doing, and still kind of hurtful to see the anguish in his eyes. And he looked as though he felt somewhat dejected at that time. He tried to hobble off, and I was thinking, don't do that, son, please. But then his teammates, you know, were there to help him, and so
they're his brothers.
Yeah.
How soon after were you able to talk with him?
I talked with him probably about 5 to 10 minutes afterwards, and he just told me not to cry because, you know, I know he worked so hard to get back to play, and he just told me he was going to be okay and don't worry.
My thoughts on that is that really, like, it sounded like so somber that, like, Kevin Durant had, like, a death-defying illness.
That entire clip, I was wondering, why did Chris pick this one? So is it because usually these are funny, or at least there's something that
I just thought it was interesting.
Are we
going to dunk
on Kevin Durant's mom?
Well,
I'm confused.
I just think it's interesting that Good Morning America thought this was like.
It's a big story.
It's a big story, but what I'm saying is they put it out to be like, oh, like Kevin Durant's never going to play basketball. Like, yes, that was a terrible injury. Like, people tear their. Like, Kobe Bryant tore his Achilles and came back and was still very good, even though maybe he wasn't as good as before it. Kevin Durant is a type of player that I think he doesn't rely solely on athletic ability. It's more skill that
but
I think
he's like 7 feet tall.
That's what I'm saying. I think he's gonna come back and he's gonna be very good after this injury. They're putting it out there like this is like he's never gonna be able to like come back. That's how I saw that clip.
This is an extremely weird take by you. It's fine, but it's just a very strange take.
How is that? I don't think it's an extreme take.
I didn't say extreme. It's very strange. I think it's a weird thing to get stuck in your craw. Like, and you know how the content business goes. Like, if you can get a story,
that's
somebody's
true.
Mom,
it might be
you're
a
gonna
slow,
take that.
It might be a slow day on.
But he's a great
GMA.
Player. He was gonna rule the off season with Kawhi. Where do those guys go and everything? And it's a devastating injury on the biggest stage. It knocks him out for next year. And guys don't come back the same from Achilles injuries for the most part. No. I think it's fine.
We'll see. We'll see. I think KD's going to be fine. I think people are.
You going to sign him to a max deal? Would you want your team to sign him to a max deal right now? This offseason? Get the offer? Would you do it?
Personally, just because the money's too high, I wouldn't. But that doesn't mean I don't think he's worth, like. So he's going to get, what, $31 million, I think, from.
That's an opt-back in if he stays.
Well, if he opts in.
Right.
So I would give him $20 million a year and be fine with that.
Whoa, what? What are you giving him a pay cut? You think he's going to come back fine, but now you're trying to give him a pay cut?
That's just me
personally. $20 million a year doesn't get you like that gets you like half of Kyle Lowry. $20 million over the course of like several years, you're saying?
No, like a year. 20.
Yeah. 20, like 20,
20
per year.
25,
or like, a long
like 25 per year.
That is wild. I'm trying to find someone who made $20 million this year. None of the lists go down that low yet. That doesn't buy you Mike Conley. This is wild. Play the next sound. I'm gonna find you. I'm gonna destroy you in a second.
Destroy me.
But you play the next sound first. I'm Googling still. I'll tell you gets what $20 million gets you. That is wild. Those two takes cannot live together.
No, it's I probably lowballed that heavy, but I'm saying I wouldn't give him a full max. Like, I don't know what the max is. Like, I don't
have
the numbers in front of me.
$20 million this
probably
year?
Probably, like...
Jabari Parker.
Jabari Parker. Yes, my number
Tim Hardaway
was
Jr.
way too low.
But Zach LaVine. Tyler Johnson?
My point was I wouldn't give him a full max, but I would give him whatever, like,
$10
million
is
under the max.
I mean, that would be 30. Like, you know, he'd be getting about 30. He's going to get about 30-70 or whatever someone signs into a max deal.
If he doesn't opt in. If he doesn't opt in.
Right, which he's probably not going to do, but could do.
I think he's going to opt in just so he can rehab and then.
But if you're coming off that injury, you want to go get max money. He can literally make more money. And again, $27 million gets you C.J. McCollum or DeMar DeRozan, just as a barometer for $27 million gets you.
There we go. All right.
Do you have one more sound?
Yeah, we got one more sound. Let's do it. From Tyson Fury talking about tonight's big fight versus Tom Schwartz. Are you going to be in on that?
No.
No? You're not going to talk about it? You're not Stephen St. John? Okay.
Yeah, 100% chance. Tons of chances. Doesn't mean nothing. Means whatever you want it to mean. How can you say, has this guy got a chance? He's 6'5", 250 pounds. He's unbeaten in 24 fights. He's ranked number 2 in the world. He's got as good a chance as anybody else is doing anything. We all see best heavyweights in the world get chinned now and again, don't we? Klitschko was the best heavyweight in the world till I spanked him all over Germany. We've seen the best heavyweights in the world get knocked out loads of times or beaten. We're only men, we're only humans, and that's it. Anything can happen in a boxing ring.
Tyson Fury not sounded too confident. He was basically kind of saying anybody's got a chance. He's usually a guy that is very confident in himself, calls himself the Gypsy King.
Right.
That is his nickname. But I liked how he put out that he spanked Vladimir Klitschko all over Germany. That was a pretty good one.
That is pretty good. The thing currently in my head on Tyson Fury is the FaceTime that Izzy Gutierrez did on Around the Horn.
Oh, yeah.
Yesterday,
I saw that.
That
I literally just saw that today.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not cheering for this guy.
Yeah,
so at
Tyson
all.
Fury can kind of bleep off, honestly. Like, yeah.
Yeah,
that's kind of where I'm at.
I didn't, know like all anything about that.
I didn't either.
So,
no, I didn't know until I saw Izzy talk about it. Just if you haven't seen it,
you should definitely watch it.
Tyson
Fury
is homophobic, and
yeah.
Izzy Gutierrez had a very good statement on it in
yeah,
like 30 seconds.
I appreciate
horn,
it.
So yeah, I wasn't gonna watch anyway. I'm gonna be out at Whiffle at the Hollow. Actually,
get after.
I'm out here for charity, baby. I'm out here entertaining the masses for charity. That's happening tonight.
Yeah. Well, that's it. That's all we got for today. So
good work on the Bullock bites.
Yeah, but
those are some delicious bites of Bullock. What?
Yeah, deliciousness.
All right, whenever we come back here on Sports Saturday, we're going to have like 45 seconds to wrap up the show, and that's fine. We're going to get there. Yeah, that's the close music at the beginning of a segment. It means that the show's gone on long enough, and maybe too long, and that's fine with me. Thanks for hanging out with us here on Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810. Thanks to Matt Derrick. You can follow him on Twitter at Matt Derrick and read everything he does at ChiefsDigest.com. Thanks to Michael Swain, MSwain97 on Twitter. You can read everything he does at Fog.net. Thank you, Chris Bullock, for hitting all the buttons and giving us a little Bullock bite action. You can follow Chris on Twitter at Chris_Bullock. You probably have now heard my name 100,000 times here, but I'm Joshua Briscoe. I'm on Twitter at JB Briscoe, and if you like how this goes around here, just search for Almost Entirely Sports wherever you get your podcasts, or you can tune in from 4 to 6 every day over on ESPN Kansas City, and most weeknights here on Sports Radio 810. Next week is going to be packed with me everywhere. So look forward to next week. Look forward to being back here again next weekend, and enjoy the rest of your weekend, everybody. Until then, bye, Mom!